This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 13th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 164. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, a double feature. Daryl Plekis goes in-depth about his time as speaker in his unfinished business final report, and his chief of staff, Alan Mullen, tells us about the case of the mace. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or shall we consider three questions? Why did the son of a Hell's Angel get appointed by the NDP to the board overseeing the new Surrey Police Department? The Vancouver Sun revealed a photograph of Semiahmoo First Nations Chief Harley Chappell at a 2018 funeral with White Rock bikers. Why did left-wing politicians on Vancouver City Council want to defund the Vancouver Police, but eventually settle on freezing its budget instead? The Green, Cope, and One City politicians swallowed their pride and realized that police might just be necessary for a civilized community. Police don't deserve a blank check, they must be accountable, and they do need to change with the times. These politicians, however, got wrapped up in the anti-police racism and brutality protests at the end of spring, and they parroted slogans. Why, number three, did John Horgan's NDP government decide to move the 2021 budget from the second half of February to the end of April? The easy answer would be to buy time and be less accountable after calling an election a year before the law required one, an election when the pandemic needed their attention. But don't be surprised when the late spring budget includes new fees and taxes to claw back that $1,000 per family and $500 for singles recovery benefit that is to be delivered around Christmas by Santa John. The government giveth and the government taketh away. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, 2 years after raid, China's Early Rain Church stays resilient under surveillance. Apart from Pastor Wang Yi, over 100 church members were rounded up on December 9, 2018. After 1 year of detention, former human rights lawyer Wang was sentenced to 9 years in prison for inciting subversion of state power. The church has been a thorn in the government's side for bringing attention to sensitive topics, including commemorating the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre and assisting families of political prisoners. ABC News Australia. Australian whose Uyghur wife and child were stuck in China celebrates their return. Saddam Abudu Salamu met his son Lutfi for the first time following years of anxiety after his then-pregnant wife, Nadila Wumeyer, was caught up in China's crackdown on Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities in Xinjiang. The pair's return to Australia follows years of media coverage and lobbying by the Australian government and human rights activists. It has been estimated that at least 1 million Uyghurs are held in internment camps in Xinjiang, which China labels re-education centers. Anchorage Daily News. Anchorage Photo Lab will close after nearly 40 years, bowing to digital imaging and the pandemic. Keller's Custom Photo Lab will take its last orders on December 18th and close its doors for good on Christmas Eve. The turning point was 2003. That's when the quality of digital cameras left photographers with few reasons not to adopt them. The technology also helped photographers get images to their customers faster. Some photographers stuck with film, preferring its particular look, but their numbers were few. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Eugene Register Guard, Hop Valley Brewing Company offers to obliterate 2020 objects with cryo drops. Using liquid nitrogen, it freezes the hops, which it calls cryo hops, to brew a less bitter IPA. Applying its special brewing process, the brewery will freeze unlucky, bad vibes-infused personal items at sub-zero temperatures and then smash them into a million spiteful pieces. On New Year's Eve, the items will be dropped, and then people can watch the live stream of items being frozen and obliterated on Instagram. In the Seattle Times, Apollo Ono honors father's devotion to Belltown shop as retail core suffers through pandemic. The neon sign bearing his name has been broken 3 times. His door has been damaged 2x when someone tried to break in. One day when Yuki Ono, the father of the retired Olympic short track speed skater, was in the back of the salon, a man came in with a trash bag and cleared a shelf of products into it, then ran out. Ono chased after the man, who dropped the bag. Seattle Police Department crime statistics show that while robbery and aggravated assault are down in Belltown and downtown neighborhoods, burglaries have spiked from 473 and 493 in 2018 and 2019, respectively, to almost 600 through October 2020. In the Coast Reporter, former Gibson's counselor receives maximum fine for careless driving. Silas White was fined $2,000, is on probation for 1 year, and will not drive unless the car is equipped with an interlock device. White was originally charged with impaired driving causing bodily harm after a September 2018 single vehicle crash. The shoe-in for Gibson's mayor withdrew 2 days later. He had claimed that he was already suffering from a concussion. The careless driving plea bargain came during a 3-day trial in Sechelt Provincial Court. White crashed after a booze-filled house party. His 2 passengers suffered multiple cuts, bruises, broken bones, and brain injuries. Most recently, White was the campaign manager for Jeremy Valeriot of the BC Green Party, who lost a recount in West Vancouver Sea to Sky. These headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Ex-Whitecaps national women's coach Berarda charged with sexual assault exploitation. Timeline revealed in Metro Vancouver's deadly Capilano River surge. Read the stories behind the headlines at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. Daryl Plekis, 39th Speaker of British Columbia's Legislative Assembly, released his final report on December 11th, at the end of a week when new Speaker Raj Chauhan presided over the first post-election session. The report is called Unfinished Business, and it recounts Plekis's ups and downs as referee in the seat of government and the loose ends left when Premier John Horgan called an election earlier than required. Plekis and his chief of staff, Alan Mullen, were catalysts for a range of new and revised policies to modernize the 122-year-old workplace after calling in the RCMP to investigate Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz more than 2 years ago. Plekis used the report to call on lawmakers to push for change and to continue his quest to end corruption. I spoke to Daryl Plekis on the day Unfinished Business was released.
So when I talk about unfinished business, you know, and people think, oh, we're talking about, you know, we haven't seen charges yet. Well, charges is one thing. We can park that for the moment. The bottom line is this. We had an investigation which determined that we had a sergeant at arms, that is a head of security, who behaved inappropriately to such an extent he did not deserve to be on the job. He was found guilty under the Police Act. Forget about charges otherwise. That is a fact. We had an investigation by McLaughlin that said the clerk behaved inappropriately in a number of different ways. He was spending money that he shouldn't have been spending. And of course, from my perspective, from what I know, that's all of that's only the half of issues, because the police are looking at other issues and we can't talk about those things. But I would say, I think the average British Columbian would say, well, look no further. Like, you don't have to get to criminal charges to conclude that something's wrong here. And why on earth were you not paying attention to that a long time ago? But oh no. It wasn't like that. Rather than say, gee, we've got something wrong here, it's been an all-out effort to say, let's make it go away. Let's never talk about this again. And no need to look any further. The signing of the agreement with the clerk exemplifies that. Here's a guy who's found by the retired Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada to have behaved inappropriately in terms of how he handled the job. And again, the chief judge was able to determine that on a very narrow scope. It wasn't even looking at all of the other kinds of things. So here we have that situation where he's found to have done something wrong, and they signed an agreement. The House leader signed an agreement with him that said, you know, number one, you don't have to pay the money back, basically. In effect, there's no requirement that he paid back the $250,000 that he paid himself inappropriately. And by the way, no one is ever allowed to say anything negative about the clerk. No elected official who worked at the clerk, worked at the legislature, and no legislative employee is ever allowed to say a negative word about the clerk. And what's even more bizarre, they extended that to include our heirs. So I'm sure what people who work at the ledge don't know, and what elected officials who are working there don't know, it doesn't just apply to them, it applies to their children and their grandchildren. Well, what kind of a nonsense agreement is that, that you're able to sign something off without first having permission of any of these people? You just go ahead and do it. And of course, once again, they think they can get away with it because they're controlling the strings. At every single turn, they control the response. They control the degree to which there's transparency and accountability, because there is no outside controls. Those things are need to be fixed. And until they are, that organization is fundamentally flawed. It's culturally flawed.
Plekis wrote about the resistance to change and the resistance to transparency and accountability that he experienced inside the legislature. The BC Liberals especially lost sight of their mission as the shadow cabinet. They became the opposition to the speaker as revenge for Plekis questioning Christy Clark's leadership after the 2017 election. But Plekis developed what Hillary Clinton called rhinoceros skin.
From the very beginning, it was an uphill struggle because of the structure of the place, the way they did business, the absence of any kind of mechanisms to deal appropriately with wrongdoing. And then, of course, aggravated yet further, because when I would bring these things to the attention of people at the legislature, they moved heaven and earth to thwart my efforts. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about people who work there, I'm talking about elected officials. I'm reminded of the investigation we called for into the behavior of the sergeant at arms. And in our view, it was behavior which violated in more than one way what would be normally expected under the police act of a police officer. And of course, the investigation ultimately discovered that we couldn't have been more right. You know, he was found guilty of the most egregious kinds of transgressions under the police act. And of course, then he's allowed to retire. But what was interesting in trying to get that review done, it was only my kicking and screaming, and as they said, pounding on the desk, to have that review accomplished. And whilst I was to do that, there was people yelling from the rooftops, stop this nonsense, don't let this go ahead, we don't need this. And then, of course, we have another investigation by McLaughlin, the retired Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, and one would think, oh, my goodness, like, this is fantastic. Like, finally, we have an independent perspective on this, and we'll get to the bottom of things. Well, not quite. And not quite, because McLaughlin's terms of references were so restricted. She was limited in what she could look at, and then aggravated yet further because they gave her a very strict timeline. And aggravated yet further because people who we would have expected, that is, as employees, we would have expected to go before the Chief Justice and tell the truth about what they knew. And they did not do that. Plain and simple, they lied to the Chief Justice of the retired Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada. So the other example of an investigation was the investigation that I called for by the Auditor General. Well, if there was ever an example of a complete and utter whitewash, it was that. There was nothing in that review that held anybody accountable for anything. You know, it's as typical of Auditor General's reports. You know, they'll say, we need to change this, we need to change that, but nobody's ever pointed to as being a person responsible. So that was wholly inadequate, and the time frames on that were wholly inadequate. And then, of course, you say, well, how does this all happen? Well, it happens because the leadership of the legislature is working to structure these things so that they limit the ability to get at the truth. There's no question about that. Like, if they were truly interested in getting to the bottom of matters, they would have taken, for example, a memo that I wrote regarding an incident where the previous clerk had an inappropriate relationship with a staff member, and it ultimately resulted in her being dismissed. It was a horrible situation. I considered a very serious Me Too kind of allegation that needed to be looked into. Well, that never saw the light of day. In fact, I went so far as to say it needed to be considered by McLaughlin. Well, it wasn't even on the table.
When the corruption scandal exploded in November 2018, Plekis was dumbfounded. The press gallery focused on him more than on the clerk and the sergeant at arms. But a poll by Research Co. found Plekis had the support of average British Columbians concerned about public spending and the integrity of public institutions and officials.
We're not asking people to pat us on the back and say, look, everything we do is right. Of course, that's not the case. But I would say it's fair comment to say that by and large, there are certain members of the press gallery who moved heaven and earth to trash every single thing we did, and in some cases without even reading what it is they were talking about. And one thing which exemplifies that is my most recent reports on the speakers forum. Like, here's an exercise we went through, and you know this, we've talked about it on your podcast, where we have all of these people participating, looking at what can we do to make people's jobs better and make the work of what MLAs do better, and so that we can operate in a more efficient, effective manner and more respectful of community participation. Well, that's a noble idea. Well, what people don't know is that there was people on Lansing who moved heaven and earth to try and stop that from ever happening at all. The only reason that ever got off the ground in the first place was Sonia Forsno saying to the one person who was fighting hard to not see it go ahead, and you would say to yourself again, well, who on earth wouldn't think this was a decent idea to have good public participation in looking at how we could do things differently. But until Sonia Forsno stood up and said, well, why don't you just say that in public, which turned out to shut the person up, and then it went ahead. But once again, I can't think of any time where people have come to me and said, you know what, that's an interesting concern. Let's see what we can do to make it better. Again, I'm reminded of the whole exercise by my chief of staff, Alan Mullen, saying, whoa, what's ever going on here in security certainly doesn't fit to my experience and certainly doesn't seem like it's serving the British Columbia taxpayers very well. And the response to that was, let's kill off the messenger. Alan Mullen isn't qualified to do anything in life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was pure garbage. And what was even worse is even after it became apparent from his report that he couldn't have been more right, they continued to trash him. And to this day, whether you're talking about me or you're talking about my chief of staff, it's been a very select group of people at the legislature who've come forward and said, thank you. It's just the opposite. I would say, I want to say, because people deserve to know this, the members of the Green Party have been extremely helpful. But once you get past that, I'm telling you, I throw up my arms whenever there's a media report come out, and I say to myself, how on earth did they draw that conclusion? Because they certainly weren't looking at the facts. It's just appalling to me that the public has to put up with this.
Plekis's big regret? Not seeing whistleblower protection at the legislature.
There's one reform that I called for right from the beginning. It was a very serious one, and that was the call for whistleblower policy. Well, as I'm talking to you here now, Bob, we still don't have that. Now, how on earth is that possible in this day and age? How is it possible when, in the meantime, the government introduced whistleblower legislation respecting government employees. So for somebody to say that there's not something wrong going on here is just incredulous, because people can't come back and say, oh, I didn't know, we weren't ready, we were going to get to that, whatever. Well, meanwhile, while they're getting ready to do things, there have been a number of people, and in our estimation, a couple dozen people, who've been treated badly by the legislature, walked off the property, asked to sign non-disclosure agreements, and some of them, in their opinion, under duress, and no accountability, and nobody seems to care.
That was my feature interview with Daryl Plekis, the former independent MLA for Abbotsford South, who was the 39th speaker of the BC legislature. Go to thebreaker.news and you can read the entire unfinished business report. British Columbians learned last week that Victoria Police Department is investigating a case of apparent tampering or worse in the Speaker's office. In late October, Daryl Plekis's chief of staff, Alan Mullen, discovered the alarm for the legislature's mace had been deactivated. Whoever did this may have been motivated to do something other than steal the one-of-a-kind symbol of authority. Welcome back to the Breaker.News podcast, Alan Mullen. Walk us through this. What do you think happened?
On October 28th, I attended my office, at which point I noticed, the manager of facility services, doing some work to the mantelpiece. Now, I didn't know, and the former speaker didn't know, that the mantelpiece in the speaker's office that the mace sits on actually lifts up. So there's four bolts securing that mantelpiece. And when those four bolts are removed, that mantelpiece lifts up. And in underneath the mantelpiece is a small compartment. And in that compartment, obviously, there's wiring, and there's the connection for the alarm that, mace basically texts the mace. So what I was told at that point was that the alarm had been deactivated. It was a very deliberate act. I know it's been referenced by some folks that it could have been bumped or it could have been faulty. Like, that is 0.0% chance of that happening, because there was four bolts removed from the mantelpiece. Those four bolts were deliberately removed, and it's very interesting, they were not replaced. They were taken away. Second, there's a small box underneath the mantelpiece where there's two screws that had to be removed, and then a component actually taken out of that box. So that tells me this was a very deliberate act by somebody. I did a preliminary investigation because I thought, this is so over the top serious. To put it in perspective, like, the mace has its own evacuation plan in the case of an emergency. I mean, that is how important this is. So I did a preliminary investigation. I was advised that it was discovered by the acting sergeant at arms that morning when he went to take the mace to the chamber for some photographs. As part of my preliminary investigation, I discovered very quickly that this had actually happened back in February. So we're talking about 8.5 months that the mace was not alarmed. So that in of itself is bizarre and is crazy, that this most precious item of the legislature was not alarmed for all that time.
Why did the Victoria Police become involved instead of the Legislative Assembly Protective Services, the in-house police department at the legislature?
The acting sergeant at arms did a quote-unquote investigation, if I can call it that, for lack of a better word. I wouldn't call it an investigation, and produced a report that I can only describe, and at the risk of sounding, mean, I can only describe it as pathetic. It was not an investigation, it was not a report, and it was very clear and evident to me at that point that, look, that this has not been taken seriously, this has not been investigated properly. At the very least, we need to be able to say we've done our due diligence, we have done an investigation, that whether we find out at the end of the day what exactly happened, it remains to be seen. But we've got a responsibility here to investigate it to the full extent of our abilities here. So I felt, look, as did the former speaker, this has not been taken seriously. We need to have an outside agency, which the chief security officer referenced too. I mean, this should be investigated from the outside. So I met with the Victoria Police Department and I said, look, here's what we have here. Here's what we know. We feel it should be investigated. And we feel it should be investigated by you know, a team that is actually going to take it seriously here. Victoria Police absolutely agreed. And we actually made, and when I say we, I'm talking about the speaker and I, we actually had the conversation with Victoria Police and said, look, we're not interested in wasting anybody's time here. If you think, based on what the information and evidence that we've given you, if you think that this shouldn't be investigated or this is sort of going nowhere, like, we are totally okay with that. We are totally okay with that opinion. But they said, absolutely not. We are absolutely going to investigate this. We are assigning two detectives to this case, and here's your file number. So that was the main reason why we got Victoria Police involved, being the you know, pathetic excuse for a report that was done initially. But also the second thing, Bob, why we felt it was important to get Victoria Police involved. I'll remind you that this was a problem. This alarm wasn't in place for 8.5 months. And when the mace gets removed and the alarm goes off, it triggers an alarm in the dispatch for the protective services team. And on a daily basis, that alarm would go off twice a day when the mace is going into the house. And the officer in the dispatch would simply, you know, recognize that, hey, I know the mace is going into the house, I will acknowledge that alarm. So you get into a motion of every day that the house is sitting twice a day, you have to acknowledge that alarm. And then all of a sudden, for 8.5 months, you as a dispatch officer doesn't have to acknowledge that alarm, and you don't wonder why. Like, how is that even possible? It is just crazy to me, and it was crazy to the former speaker, and it's crazy to a lot of people that we've discussed this with. So that was another reason why we thought, look, this is there's just something really strange going on here, and that's why we you know, took it to a Victoria Police Department, who we have the greatest respect for. You know, Chief Manick and his team, I mean, second to none. So we are so confident with it being in their hands.
As they say, if the walls could talk, what stories would they tell? But if the walls were someone's ears, the day the alarm was last on, February 24th, turns out to be a day of new protests on the legislature grounds as part of the whole Shutdown Canada anti-pipeline pro-Indigenous campaign. Security measures really should have been stepped up during that period.
Absolutely. Absolutely, they should have. And yeah, I mean, at the risk of, you know, sort of sounding like a conspiracy theorist here, I mean, I've looked at a number of different, you know, theories and opinions and options. So, you know, how did I land, or how did the speaker or others land on this idea or this notion of a listening device? Well, first of all, I'll remind everybody, I ordered the speaker's office to be swept for listening devices back in April. There was a very clear reason why I did that. We had enough concerns and information to suggest that really needed to happen. So I brought in a team from Vancouver to sweep the speaker's office. It's the same group that sweep other offices like the premier's, etc. So I mean, this is a team that knows what they're doing. So that's number one. We obviously had reason to do that. Number two, if you look at other options or suggestions, i.e., it was a prank. Well, like, I'm not even going to speak to that. Like, that's just rubbish. Like, to suggest it was a prank. To suggest that somebody wanted to steal the mace, well, I would dismiss that, because if somebody wanted to steal the mace would be gone. They had 8.5 months that was, you know, not alarmed. If they wanted to steal it, they would have stolen it. So that's nonsense. So the only reasonable, you know, conclusion that I can draw at this point would be a listening device, based on what I know, based on what we the fears we had back in April. And also, if you look at it, somebody removed the four bolts deliberately. And if you're smart enough to get in there and to remove the bolts and have the knowledge to disable this alarm, you're not going to forget to replace the bolts. I think that was a very deliberate action. And the reason being, then it gives you easy access on a daily basis. You can walk in there, lift up the mantelpiece, put something in or take something out on a daily basis in less than 10 seconds, because you don't have to be removing bolts, etc. So if you look at everything involved, it just seems to me that, you know, that is the only kind of reasonable place that I can land on this. There's nothing to suggest that, oh, this was bumped or this was an accident. No, it wasn't an accident. unequivocally 100% a deliberate act. And why would somebody want to bug the office? Well, there is so many, incredibly sensitive discussions and conversations that happen in that office on a daily basis. I'll remind you that, you know, we still have an ongoing criminal investigation. Would we be having discussions about that? Well, sure we would. I mean, it's ongoing. And, you know, when the speaker was in office, when I was in the chief of staff office, we would be having discussions about these sensitive issues and items. We had negotiations with LAPS and management about union. Could it be something to do with that? We have daily visits from, you know, consul generals, ambassadors, etc. So there's a number of different areas that there's a lot of people that would be very interested in various items, that we were having discussions about. So, you know, we're not talking about, you know, international espionage here or a James Bond movie. I mean, this is very real. There's reasons why the premier and premiers across the country and the prime minister, et cetera, have their offices swept for listening devices on a somewhat regular basis.
Listeners to the Breaker.News podcast wonder what's next for you, Alan Mullen.
I mean, who knows? I mean, obviously, I'll be looking at other career choices and other jobs, but not yet, because we have so much more to do. You'll see, obviously, referenced in the report, unfinished business. We've got more to do with regards to that stuff. We've still got 26 plus whistleblowers waiting for an answer, waiting for some resolution. I'm not letting that go just because I'm not in that office. Like, these people need to be made whole. And also, we still have an outstanding criminal investigation. Am I confident that we will be hearing something about that soon? Yes, I am. We put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that. And again, why? Because it's the right thing to do. So what's next for me? Well, let's get this finished first and then we'll see. But I'm hoping it can be something in the public domain of, I want to help people. I want to look after people, because I'm so tired of the little guy getting essentially screwed over. You know, it's always the little guy that gets kicked when he's down. Well, I'm not into that. Daryl Plekis isn't into that. And we will continue to fight for the little guy. We'll continue to fight for, you know, British Columbians and the taxpayers. Because if we don't, who will? And if now is not the time to get better and to change, then when? You know, so we've got a lot to do, Bob. And you know, I can't thank you enough for your support over the years and for your listener support. Because, you know, it's been a rough go here. But like, I could not be more proud of Daryl Plekis and the work that he's done. And it's just been the honor of a lifetime to serve as his chief of staff, in his speakership.
Well, thanks again for Alan Mullen for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast this week. Alan Mullen, the former chief of staff to former speaker Daryl Plekis.
We're all in this together, and we've got to brave this stormy weather.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Jewish people across British Columbia. Happy Hanukkah. It's a different Hanukkah during this pandemic. And did you know that the oldest synagogue in use in Canada is in Victoria, the Congregation Emmanuel. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. And a special thank you to those that organized the Jack Webster Awards on December 8th. Honoring British Columbia's best journalism since 1987, the awards went virtual in 2020 because of the pandemic. Go to jackwebster.com to watch the replay, hosted by CBC's Anita Bath. The namesake is legendary BC journalist Jack Webster. When I was a child, I met him at CJOR Radio, where he worked with my father. But I didn't really appreciate Webster's importance to British Columbia until he moved into television at BC TV in 1978.
Good morning. In case you've forgotten, my name is Webster, Jack Webster. And I'm the chap that used to be on morning radio. And now I'm on morning television, and I'm going to do my best to keep you interested in my approach to people and news. I hope you'll watch every morning if you can, if only to give me a chance to prove that I'm something more than a pretty face dealing with people and issues.
I was honored on December 8th to be recognized with the CTV News Vancouver team. I collaborated with reporter David Malko on a two-part feature about price gouging during the pandemic.
For many, the economic impact of the pandemic is almost as severe as the public health consequences. CTV Vancouver's in-depth coverage exposed stories ranging from outrageous price gouging to huge gaps in the government's economic support for business. The goal was to highlight the help businesses really need and to guide consumers in making better financial decisions during the pandemic.
And the winner, Excellence in Business, Industry, Labor, and Economics Reporting, Shannon Patterson, Ross McLaughlin, Sinjin Alexander, John Woodward, Allison Hurst, David Molko, Andrew Weichel, Bob Mackin, CTV Vancouver for Economic Catastrophe, BC Business Faces the Pandemic. Congratulations.
Congratulations to all the nominees. When your face is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, cause this is our. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 13th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 13th in 1972, Americans Eugene Cernan and Harrison Schmitt went for a moonwalk? They are the last humans to set foot on the moon. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. All I Want for Christmas Is You by the YVR Pop Choir. Find it on Chorus Studio on YouTube. Until next week.